Welcome to the Vortex Nation podcast, brought to you by lovers of hunting, shooting, public lands, the Second Amendment, and good food. All right, everybody, here we are. Wee Bit Loopy, the group that we have here, Eric, Ryan, Muckenhern, across the table from Mark and I, Jimmy on the mic here, but we just got done discussing the topic of UFOs.
And kangaroos.
And kangaroos made its way in there.
Strong correlation.
But that may be a necessary topic at hand in the future. If we can get a good UFO professional on the podcast, I think we'd have the conversation pieces that were going on at this time, at this table, right before recording here, were, I actually, a little hair-raising.
Oh, man. A lot of conspiracy, a lot of conspicuous coincidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So speaking of
documented reporting.
Speaking of UFOs, let's talk about the holiday season when everybody describes a fat, jolly man riding around in a sleigh with reindeer attached to it all over the world in one night. I'd say there's no better parallel. But holiday season, many times, is coming in full swing immediately after the height of fall hunting season, if you will. Archery season and rifle season have, in many people's minds, come to a culmination. Would you say that's accurate?
You've kind of hit that tipping point.
Yeah.
In a lot of places.
The rut has kind of ended. At least in our area, I know in some areas maybe it's sparking up or has different time periods that it sparks up. But around here it has, and people get a little somber. They get a little bit, I guess it's time to hang things up. Well, we wanted to make this podcast to discuss a few options out there and ideas out there of why this season doesn't necessarily mean that hunting season has to be over for you. And where do we start?
Well, I think you nailed it, Jim. Like, we've kind of hit a little bit of a tipping point. They appear to be starting to slow down. People are getting busy. They have families. Maybe you've hunted a lot this fall, and you've used up a few too many kitchen passes. I know I have, but I still have plans to go out and risk my marriage. it's not over by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, really, a lot of opportunities, and I guess I always think, you know, in the context of myself, being just an egotistical, self-centric person, like we all are. But you live kind of like this. Can we start over?
No.
I lost my complete train of thought there.
I think
we focus on big game a lot in the fall.
Yeah.
Right? And there's still a lot of big game opportunities left.
Tons.
But there's a lot of small game and waterfowl and predator opportunities that are on the table and in some cases just really starting to heat up. That's what I'm trying to say.
You did it. That was good.
I wish I would have done that the first time.
Yep.
That's all right, Mark.
That's what I said.
So what are those that are really starting to heat up, if you will? Because I know some people might look at this time of year and think to themselves, okay, yeah, technically there are still seasons going on, but they're not really that worth it to go out and try and get something. It's not like anything is
au contraire
easy to spot or see, or I'd just be wasting my time out there.
Well, I mean, here, super timely, and I'll let Eric talk about it, but he just finished sighting in his muzzleloader this morning, which sounds like it's just shooting famously, by the way.
It is.
And
thanks for the help on the firing pin, by the way, Ryan.
I do. You know, the Muzzy Hunt, Ryan and I went on last year. That's a fantastic December hunt. It lasts a month in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, kind of getting towards the tail end of our muzzleloader season here.
We have five more days.
That's the season, or one of the seasons you're most excited about here, like more so than the gun season.
Yep. I think, you know, if you still have a deer tag in your pocket, I think December and January can be the best time of the year. Better than the rut to fill that tag.
Would you say what's the biggest reason? Because my guess right off the bat when you say that is just, I'm guessing you go out in the woods on December 1st and public land, there's orange everywhere. Mm-hmm. Go out December 2nd with a muzzleloader, and you might be one of the only people out there.
Yep, that plays a big factor in it. A lot of the deer are kind of worn down after the rut has kind of culminated, so they're on that classic bed-to-feed pattern. They're very patternable, and especially deer that are really worn down, they're going to be hitting those food sources a lot harder than they would have in November when it's kind of like helter-skelter. Yet for general deer movement, you know, the rut is probably going to be your best bet just to catch random deer movement or see a lot of deer. But if you can get hyper-focused on a specific spot that maybe leads into a cornfield that just got picked or, you know, any kind of standing crop or even, you know, natural browse, I think you're going to have a really good shot because those deer are you know, so you hear the term slave to their stomach, which I think is really overused and, you know, whatever, but it is true. Deer are right now putting on the feed bag before the snow piles up and they're really predictable.
Well, I mean, and you see, like, you know, you're talking about, you know, getting on a bed to food pattern and, you know, catching them in between. Mm-hmm. There's times where you'll see them actually, they're already in the field during daylight hours, and they might even be in a place where they've been pressured heavily. You know they don't want to be there.
Yeah.
They actually, I mean, they're there because they have to be there.
And like, you know, you said the word pressured. Like, they've been pressured like crazy here in Wisconsin over the gun season. A lot of the states, you know, that are just kind of wrapping up their firearm season, they've definitely been pounded. But it's amazing how fast they kind of recuperate from that pressure. Like you said, Jimmy, December 1st, our gun season ended here, and on the 2nd, muzzleloader opened. And it's an extremely significant, noticeable dip in hunting pressure. You drive past public land parking lots right now, and there's not a single vehicle in them. Granted, there are some people out there taking advantage of that season, but there's just there aren't that many statistically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, December and January hunting goes on for, you know, another 2 months here. Weather's cold. Not a lot of people like sitting out there and kind of enduring those temperatures. So if you can kind of create a system for yourself that's going to help you spend more time in the field during those months, you might be the only person out there doing so.
Well, and I'll tie in a little bit to that too. The one nice thing about it, at least so in my experience, I haven't had, at least I'm talking like doing like a sit, maybe mm-hmm. like a sit, like
yep.
haven't had a ton of experience doing morning hunts, right? Which kind of ties into the holidays and being busy and maybe not having as much time as you'd like, but you can do some really, really effective hunts that if barring you don't have a lot of travel time to your hunt spot.
Yeah.
But you're only burning an afternoon, maybe a couple hours in the afternoon, depending mm-hmm. on where that spot is. So you can, it's an easy hunt. Like if you got spots where you can sneak away to, where you're not impacting the family or like feeling guilty, I should be spending time with the kids or the family. You can really slip out and have mm-hmm. a quality, effective hunt.
Well, and mm-hmm. usually the way legal shooting light works around this time of year as well is legal shooting light ends at like 4:15 in Wisconsin, I think, right about now.
Right.
So mm-hmm. you're back before dinner if you don't get anything.
Yeah.
You know, which you hope you get something, and then you're out pretty late. But
yep. Then you're bringing home dinner.
Yeah, but we never tell the significant other that. And just say, well, hey, legal shooting light ends at 4:15, so I'll be back by dinner.
God,
just kidding, I got something. But
I'll tell you, so I was looking, Jim, you and I are leaving on a trip on Monday.
Yeah.
You know, and our muzzleloader season wraps up on Monday. I couldn't remember when we got back. And so I was, I shouldn't say, this sounds like I'm horrible and like I'm afraid of my wife. But my thought was... which I might be. My thought was, wait a minute, if we get back at like noon, there's really not a significant reason to punch back into the office. I could throw my muzzleloader in my pickup and then go straight from the trip that we're going on and go muzzleloader hunting at least one evening before it closes and not maybe have to tell other people about it. And then, of course, like you said, if I got one, then the cat would be out of the mm-hmm. bag, and then I'd just cross that bridge I got to it.
Right, right.
Line has worked great for me, historically.
Is that what they call it? Is that what I was planning?
I think what you're explaining is, it's kind of right in that lying window.
I think it was more of just a not telling.
Okay, yeah. Now, one thing that you were mentioning, let's changing gears here. You discussed the fact that the rut has wound down a little bit, and I think people, we've discussed it a little bit in the past, people hype up the rut to be this borderline, like, what's the word for it? I mean, just supernatural thing, right? So you go out in the rut, it's like deer are literally going to be tripping over themselves everywhere, mm-hmm. and you're going to shoot one. Mm-hmm. I was out during the rut, didn't see a single deer.
Mm-hmm.
During legal shooting light, I saw a bunch, of course, when it got dark out and, you know, whatever.
Right.
But, you know, during legal shooting light where I was sitting and kind of looking around and still hunting, didn't see a single deer.
Mm-hmm.
Saw a lot of evidence, no suspects.
Mm-hmm.
But that just goes to show, I mean, it's still a bit of a, you know, I don't want to say a total crapshoot, because there are people who have techniques and things and can sort of come close to predicting maybe where they may see a deer. But it still is a bit of a crapshoot, even during that time. And so to go out, it's hard for me to say that my chances are less just because it's not during the rut. Because clearly I didn't see these, like I said, supernatural powers of the rut just have deer like falling over themselves trying to get to me.
Most deer I ever saw on a hunt was with Mark. It was January 2nd, Missouri.
Oh my gosh.
It was 27 ambient below.
Without wind chill.
Without wind chill. It was ridiculously cold. I shot a deer the night before. As I am cleaning this deer, another eight deer walk like 60 yards from me straight to the food source that Mark was hunting on.
What was the food source?
I believe it was clover or hay.
I thought it was turnips.
No, there was turnips.
The last time
there.
We went, it was turnips.
But
oh, it was beans.
Okay.
Anyways.
Yeah. The following evening, we hunt. Excuse me. The night I shot the doe was only like 12 below. The following evening, Mark and I are sharing a ground blind.
That's when I lost my glove.
And it was, I mean, it was cold.
Classic.
It was cold. I shot a deer on the field within, what, 10 minutes? 20 minutes?
Yeah.
There was another 30 deer on the field. They had to eat. Mark and I sat there as deer. We had an antler point restriction area. So we would be very selective, and there's quite a few broken off deer and smaller bucks, and we weren't picky for anything of any size, but we wanted to shoot, of course, a legal deer. And I don't believe you had a doe tag.
I didn't buy a doe tag, no.
Or a duck tag.
We were nearly talking at like a normal level about these deer that are walking 35, 45, 55 yards in front of this ground blind that we're sitting in on the edge of the field. It was nuts.
It was almost at points as if they were like, do what you got to do. I mean, I guess it's going to be one of us. So hopefully it's not me.
I bet that
these
night.
These turnips are lovely.
I bet that night we saw 60 deer.
Jeez.
The following morning, we were on the property walking through it, and we were flushing deer like you would, like coveys of quail, bedded on hillsides in the sun, like trying to stay warm because it was, at that point, like 9 below 0 ambient. It was crazy. Cold weather made them do just nuts stuff. And so, yeah,
That
beat any rut that I have ever been a part of.
Yeah.
And that was a good spot. I mean, that was a piece of private, you know, so that was a low pressure area. But yeah, I mean, the amount of half rack deer that we saw, there is, and I'm not super picky, but like, you know, I guess you're kind of hoping to get one with both sides. And there's a couple, I feel like it's so terrible, decent eights, for lack of a better term, but they only had one side. And
I don't think we could have shot a half rack, could we? Or if it had four on one side?
Yeah, it needed to have four, I think.
Okay. It was a crazy experience anyway. And I think the lower hunting pressure of the muzzleloader season is really what got me into the muzzleloading back in the kind of mid-2000s, about 2004 or 2005, I suppose.
Yeah. And about a year back, we were talking on the podcast, and now you're about muzzleloader hunting, and you're using some pretty state-of-the-art muzzy stuff.
I'm on both ends of that spectrum. I've got.
Are you still using a Hawken at sometimes too?
Yeah. I like the Hawken way better.
Why?
It's just very romantic, and I can only shoot it like 100 yards. I've shot it to 150. I took five pokes at 150. The gun is, quote, zeroed for 150, and I hit the 10-inch flasher 2 times out of 5. And it was like a 7-mile-an-hour crosswind, and every one of my shots had veered off due to wind. It's a very difficult gun to shoot.
What's your, where are you at 50 and 100 then? If you're zeroed at 150 with that gun?
50, I'm barely high. 100, I'm pretty high. Yeah, it's got a significant drop.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, it sounds like it.
It's not a gun that you go, you know, try to win world records at distance.
Well, yeah, because meanwhile, your
it's
other
no bitch
one
cat.
Is like a 1,000-yard, yeah, no bitch cat,
right.
A 1,000-yard capable muzzleloader.
And I really love that gun. It shoots better than a lot of my center fires. It's just very big, it's heavy, and it's very mechanized and cold. So, you know, not a big deal, but I like the patch round ball. I'm very enamored with that. I'm going to do that quite a bit more.
Yeah.
Can you shoot Blackhorn out of it?
No.
No.
Not out of that one. So I have to use a number 11 Magnum percussion cap. I shoot 90 grains of Swiss 3F black powder underneath a mink oil lubricated patch and a 535 diameter Hornady round ball.
Gosh, you're such a nerd.
It's cool, man. It's neat. It shoots, it's like a one hole gun at 50 yards. It's neat. Just wow. Cuts a neat little clover leaf pattern there.
Nice. When you shoot muzzleloader too, you can also get yourself into some places that you can't even get into when you're when rifle hunting.
Yeah, well. That's a good point, Jim. Yeah.
So I know that it I think is mostly, and I may be wrong about this. So the only time I've experienced it is in some urban areas, relatively urban areas. So I know that there is some spots around the city here, around Madison, where you cannot hunt it with a rifle, even if it's during rifle season, but you can hunt with a shotgun or a muzzleloader in that area or in those areas. So, you know, again, sometimes people might not even consider those spots, and you may be able to sneak in there with something like this, and then you get a longer season too, because you can go in. You can hunt with a muzzleloader during the rifle season, right? I mean, that's not an issue.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's just like you can hunt with a bow as well. Yep. And bow season's even still going on, right?
Yeah. When does Wisconsin's bow season close? January?
January 5th, across most of the state, but then there's quite a few counties in the southern half of the state that extended it until January 31st.
That's crazy. So, Minnesota's got a season now that's bumping into the latter parts. They've got a reduction season in the southwestern corner or southeastern corner.
And Ohio goes into February.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Ohio's archery season for sure. Maybe it is their muzzleloader season that actually does go into February. Yeah. I'd have to check on that. But
there's Alabama that has a February rut hunt.
Yeah, the Southern Rut.
Yeah,
it's a crazy thing. Florida, I don't know if they have a hunt, but they talk about their rut kicking up. I saw Clay Hayes was talking about that the other day about the Florida rut and how it's late and it's a weird thing. And which brings me to a question I have for you, Mark, because you've hunted coos deer now a couple times. Some of the country is just waking up as far as deer hunting opportunities.
That's a great point.
And so if we're looking at Old Mexico, New Mexico, Arizona, Southern California, Texas, and Louisiana, those are all late hunts. That's when we've not been hunting whitetails up in the Midwest or Western deer. Now we're heading south, waterfowl opportunities and big game opportunities.
I mean, that's a super interesting to bring up. Like, we're talking about the rut winding down here, like Midwest, and even like, you know, I mean, I know in like Washington, which I guess is about as west as it gets, like the rut is, it really follows the same lines as what we have going on here. Yep. Like first, second week in November, those whitetails, you know, really start to crank, you know, the blacktails last week of October into mid-November. That's like a really, you know, that's when, but yeah, Texas, Arizona, you know, Mexico, they're starting to get amped up for their rut.
Are we in the opposite of hunting season time in the southern hemisphere of the earth?
Seasonally, yes. It's inverse.
Yeah. So
as we enter our winter, the southern hemisphere will be entering their summer.
Yeah. And so is that, so right now they're not even thinking about hunting.
Well, it depends.
Sorry, I just thought about that and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot everything's opposite down there.
Yeah, and rut, like quote,
the deer's antlers grow downward.
And the toilets go the other direction.
Yeah.
And they don't shed, they actually pick up.
Yeah.
That's really weird.
Cats are man's best friend.
Everybody speaks backwards. It's like,
you know, people are going to be playing this in reverse now to figure out what you just said.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so I can't speak to like stag in South America because I don't know when they enter their roar.
I think like when people go hunt New Zealand, I mean, oftentimes people are doing that in the spring, and I think, don't quote me, if you know, let me know, comment below, whatever, but I think the spring is kind of when that stuff starts to crank off over there.
Anyway, most people probably aren't going to be taking their holiday season to go hunt New Zealand. Back to the U.S. Although I think we probably have some New Zealandish listeners, perhaps. Anyway, mostly U.S. So, there are I was thinking about this, that as it seems as though the rut, if you will, matters more longitudinally.
Kind of.
Because we're pretty even with Washington.
Fairly.
Up and down wise.
Yep.
But you say kind of.
I don't know where, maybe it's in North Florida where they have that small deer population that ruts in late August or early August.
Oh, yeah. You've talked about that one before.
Yep. There's a rut hunt in Florida that takes place in like the middle of summer.
You kidding me?
No, seriously. It's I'd have to look it up.
What an interesting place too, because they also have the subspecies white-tailed key deer. And mm-hmm. if you want to see probably one of the most adorable things, you look at a key deer.
Mm-hmm.
Can't hunt them, I don't think.
Nope.
Be neat.
What, are they just like a little tiny thing?
They are unbelievably small. They are like the size of Rory.
Oh, my little dog.
Yep, they got little short faces and cute stubby little legs.
Oh, that's fun.
Island deer. They're very interesting. It would be neat to hunt them. Mm.
So, aside from deer, what else is going on in the holiday season? What kind of like, I've heard people, I've been out on, we didn't even talk about the holiday hunt yet. Mm-hmm. I know in Wisconsin we have the holiday hunt, which goes from December 24th to January 2nd or 1st or something like that, essentially. And that one seems to have been put in place almost to honor traditions in a way, right? Because it's not exactly a time that a lot of people really would think of as like, time to go hunting.
Yep.
But everybody's family is coming home, and so they put...
Yep. It's an opportunity hunt to allow people to spend time in the woods hunting with a rifle when they have time off work,
oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. Friends and family, and all that stuff. So it is a cool opportunity. The holiday hunt, you're limited to antlerless deer only.
Yeah.
At one time, we weren't.
Correct, yeah. You know, like we touched on, beyond that, archery season goes for a ways.
When I've been out holiday hunting, which is now a verb, I remember hearing some blouches in the distance that mm-hmm. sounded like shotguns, and somebody said that they were probably waterfowlers.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Waterfowl goes on late.
Yeah.
Yeah. In some places, and then down south, like you go to, if you want to prime hunting in Louisiana, or
right,
we're just going to say like the Gulf Coast area, mm-hmm. now it's just the time.
Yep.
Like getting December, January. That's when you go down there.
Okay.
Yep.
What is it up here? What are they shooting at up here when they're...
So, considering like a lot of the birds are... We've got a resident population, a nesting population of a lot of different waterfowl species here. And
yeah.
then as you go further north and you get up into Canada and even the Arctic, a lot of those birds nest there. And so we hunt them at more or less the beginning of their migratory phase down south. So we're catching them on the front. And the seasons, if you look at the various seasons and when they open and when they close, up north are going to generally be earlier, close earlier, and down south are going to be later, close later.
Okay.
So we're just catching the birds on the southernmost portion of their migration.
So late December is probably fairly far in the end
right into the pocket.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Got it.
The other thing, too, I don't know how far we want to get into, like, small game and upland opportunities.
It's the best time of year.
But, yeah, it
is it really?
Small game, rabbits and squirrel right now. Pheasant hunting is phenomenal right now. So you can really kind of do that true, like, smorgasbord type hunt, small game smorgasbord, and now's the best time to do it.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Squirrels, for example, like, they're just getting crazy about getting into hibernation. So they're out feeding like crazy. Trying to stash fat, trying to stash nuts.
Yep. The leaves are off.
Yep.
You can see them.
Yep.
That's one of the most fun hunts I did literally all last fall was just hunting squirrels on a little like walnut grove right around like
it's bait pile.
Dude, it was unbelievable. There's this little patch of you know, like a walnut thicket, and it's loaded with walnuts. Literally, you go in there and all you hear is... squirrels chewing on walnuts. And there's a little like tree that you can climb up about 4 or 5 feet up off the ground so you can see down a little bit. And, you know, all you see, especially if you get a little light dusting of snow, those squirrels are so easy to see. And you can see for forever because it's open, you know, black walnut timber. And, man, it is fun. Like every time you go in there, you're gonna shoot some squirrels.
Fish in a barrel.
We have to do that, by the way.
I'm in.
It is a blast.
Especially after I had Micah's little squirrel roll-ups the other day.
Squirrels in a blanket.
Yep.
Holy man.
You also don't have to worry about fleas as much. I've shot rabbits. Like last year we had that crazy like negative 40 degree day.
Yeah.
I would love if like someone could chime in about this because people always say wait till after hard frost.
Steve,
and then you won't...
Steve had an article on his...
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. People always say after a hard frost, you don't have to worry about fleas on rabbits. I shot rabbits on literally like vortex closed. It was that cold. It was like negative 40 last year.
You went out that day?
I shot a couple rabbits that day.
God, Rick is just...
God, glad you made it.
He's the man's man.
I tried going out for a hike that day, and I remember my wife like threatened to divorce me if I went outside.
It was a pretty low impact. There was a hedgerow behind our house. Went and hit that. Shot two rabbits. But anyways, they were literally covered in fleas. It was the coldest day of like
40 below. It was nuts.
Yeah.
Those suckers are resilient.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
So I want someone to chime in on that if they're listening and can speak to it.
I mean, I guess the fleas, they don't hibernate, so they got to live through the winter, right? And
what better place than a rabbit's back?
Delicious.
True. And when you, like, if you get fleas on you, you got to worry. I mean, you're just going to get itchy, right?
Yeah. And
what's the biggest issue that you
can get? No, I mean, a flea can carry, because they are biting insect or arthropod or whatever the hell they are.
Okay, they are.
They can, it's not good. You don't want fleas. You can get bubonic plague from the fleas. So
bubonic plague?
Yeah.
Keep your rabbits outside. Don't bring them inside.
So once you kill...
It sounds like you're speaking from experience.
Oh, yeah.
So once you kill the host, a lot of times the fleas will abandon ship pretty quick. Because they've got, one, it's not generating heat to keep them alive, and two, it's not providing them with sustenance anymore.
Yeah.
I did shoot a coyote one time in South Dakota, drove home, hung it in my dad's garage.
Gee.
Dad's not listening because he doesn't know how to work a podcast. and as I'm skinning it, I keep hearing what sounds like if we took very small pebbles and dropped them on cardboard. And I kept thinking, like, what is that? Like, I didn't shoot this coyote in like a sand pile or anything, you know?
They're jumping off.
There's fleas abandoning ship.
All you can hear is them screaming.
And they're landing on the cardboard. And so I get down to the cardboard, look, I'm like, oh no. And so I thought, now what am I going to do? So I've been skinning this coyote now for actually several coyotes for the past hour. And so I did a garage change, and it was very cold in the garage at night. It was well below freezing, so I'm assuming they didn't make it, and never told my dad. So, but they abandon once the critter's dead.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I wonder how long they can live once they lose that host and it's cold out like that.
So when you skin it out,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then somebody goes and makes a coyote skin cap out of it, the fleas aren't going to be there because they're like, well, why would I be here?
Right. If they were, they would never make it through the tanning process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Noted. A lot of chemicals there.
Yeah.
Noted.
The other cool thing, you know, if you have access to snowshoes, now is such a cool time to do some of these like small game hunts like that. You get some snow on the ground, and grouse especially, you know, you can get into some really, really good late season grouse hunts. And snowshoes are the key to that, because like up in northern Wisconsin, there's legitimately 30 inches of snow on the ground right now. But December to end of January, I know sometimes they cut that season a little bit short, but that December late season grouse hunting is amazing.
Yeah.
Really, talk really cool.
I've never done it, but talk about some fresh air and exercise.
Yeah.
Explain the difference between pheasant hunting and grouse hunting, because I know that there is.
I want to say something. Because Rick.
Say it.
Rick picked on mule deer earlier today. It was subtle. But pheasant hunting is you're hunting an invasive species.
No, a non-native.
Invasive species.
A chicken.
A chicken. And grouse hunting is a gentleman's sport, or a gentlelady.
Oh, okay. I get it. So pheasant hunting is the white tail to grouses.
No.
Yep, fact. Grouses. That's the way I'll take it.
Grouse are also shot on the ground, apparently.
Oh, any way I can take them. They taste way too good.
Yep.
Pheasants are the carp of...
Well, I told you guys, I didn't know either of them could fly until you guys told me, so.
Yeah. No, pheasant hunting's cool.
Is the way you hunt them the same or different? Are they found in the same places,
different
places?
Terrain, different terrain.
Yeah, very different cover.
So a grouse would be very, like a woodland species. You're going to hunt them, you know, in the forest, and pheasants, typically you're going to hunt around marshes and prairie areas or little scattered, I wouldn't call them anywhere near mature hardwoods.
Yeah.
It's going to be in a lot of like conifer thickets, willow thickets, things like that. Mm. Not like the woods.
And they're considered small game.
Yeah.
Not waterfowl.
Or a game bird. Small
non-migratory.
So if you got a small game tag, you could shoot those.
You
do need a pheasant stamp in Wisconsin. Okay. For pheasants. You don't need any kind of stamp for grouse.
Just a hunting license.
Yeah.
Because I used to think back when that it was like waterfowl was just a bird. Of course, I was like basically forgetting the fact that water was in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then small game to me was anything with like four legs that walks and runs.
Yep,
doesn't
yep.
fly.
And, right. So you're going to need your federal duck stamp if you want to hunt waterfowl along with any other licensing. But like one thing to remember, like you can buy all your license, your state licenses here, but it's not going to get you your federal duck stamp.
But if you have a waterfowl license and not a small game license, you can't go and shoot grouse and pheasant.
Correct. But it's kind of like an ipso facto thing. Because you can't have the one in Wisconsin without the other, I don't think.
Right.
Well, you could buy just a state duck stamp and a state or a federal duck stamp in Wisconsin without buying a small game license.
You could, but you would need like
a small game to shoot.
I would say if you have all your licenses to hunt waterfowl, you also have all your licenses to hunt.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
the other cool thing.
That was just one thing I was always curious about.
Yeah, the cool thing with grouse, though, is they overlap habitat with, like, snowshoe hares. So this time of year, I know we've talked about that, doing, like, a North Woods.
We have to do it.
It's really cool because, you know, like, the DNR will break down your, like, aspen cuts on a map. And depending on what state you're in, you might have to do a little bit of digging to find it. But, like, even OnX has a layer here in Wisconsin that you can put on, and it'll identify your most, you know, 1 to 5 year old timber cuts. And you can get in and, you know, just kind of, like, do some, like, brush pounding in those areas, and you might flush a grouse just as likely you might jump a snowshoe hare. And those things are, they're a lot bigger than a cottontail. You get a heck of a lot more meat off them. Mm. And I don't think there's actually a limit on snowshoe
hare. Wisconsin, in Wisconsin, there's no limit.
Yeah,
it blows my mind.
It is a That's glorious
kind of hunt.
It'd be hard to go out and go take a bunch of snowshoes.
Yeah.
First of all, they're white.
Yeah, so it's hard.
So it's
white on white.
White on white.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult
look for its red eyes.
But when you get a snowshoe and like you hoist it up, you're like, that's a bunny for the pot, man.
Yeah.
That is a big critter.
Yep. Wow. It's a tomcat.
Yeah.
wow.
Cut.
Eric, you've held up a tomcat by its hind legs, huh?
Well, we are talking about late season hunting opportunities.
which weapon do you think is most effective or most alive this time of year?
The shotgun or the rimfire rifle.
The shotgun or the
rimfire. Or the combination of both.
Some Savage Model 24s for sale at one of the gun shops in town.
Yep.
2022.
You go out with one of those things and you're harvesting small game, potentially grouse, pheasant, all that stuff.
Shoot the squirrel at 50. Get your 410 or 20 gauge on top and then shoot the grouse that flushed at the report.
Sounds fantastic. We should do a podcast all on grouse because one thing that I think is really so cool about them, you're talking about, you know, these like grouse overlays, which are essentially denoting map overlays, I should say.
Yeah.
That are kind of denoting like this might be, quote, grousey habitat.
Yep.
You know, most of my grouse hunting experiences in Washington, I got back there this year, and it's funny, like, I couldn't even, I could kind of tell you why, and also in some ways not tell you why. I mean, did we talk about this before? But, like, there were certain areas where, like, I'd be like, this road is grousey.
So I've heard you say that all the time.
These logging road systems, and it'd be, like, just a combination of shaded, little bit of water, kind of, like, in the bend of a corner, and you've got alders and some spruce trees and, like, nice-sized gravel in the road.
Yeah.
And, I mean, not every time, but boom, there's one.
Yep.
There's one. And I think it might have been a really good year for birds as well because we ended up running into a lot of them. But, it seems like they kind of require a specific set of things to flourish.
They are a gentle creature. They kind of need it all.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing, though, with all these critters that you like all the ones that are really fickle. Well, kind of just
I'll
gentle.
Tell you, and when I feed you a rough grouse,
they are amazing.
I'm not doubting it.
You'll stare at the plate as if your life has only just started.
But then meanwhile, there's probably a pheasant living in an old abandoned farmstead in Nebraska somewhere right now, just like, you know,
still
so
safe.
Why do you
got to talk?
Alive.
I just do think it's funny.
Only because it was released.
Exactly.
Year.
No. Uh-oh.
I do think it's funny though. How like you just described this quintessential like poetic big woods habitat where you have grouse. There's probably also like blacktail working around the edges and all that stuff. Yeah.
Little babies gracefully running through the woods as music plays.
Yeah, exactly. Like, exactly. And then, meanwhile, you know, pheasants, conversely, are just kind of
they're in
like
a dark alley somewhere.
Yeah.
Beating each other up.
I would say this. Like, okay, so, like, pheasants are originally from China,
that's
I believe.
Great. Yep.
So, yeah, they are a non-native, but as is the chucker, right? Another bird that I find quite beautiful and quite fun and sporting to hunt.
Or the chakar, as Catherine calls it.
Oh, the chakar. That sounds fancy. Anyway, I'm going
to
say
your pinky
like
has to go up when you say chakar.
They live in some very beautiful places as well. And they're an absolutely breathtakingly, strikingly colored bird.
Chucker. I mean,
well, chuckers and pheasants.
Oh, yeah, right.
You want to go get some exercise, go on a chucker hunt.
I do want to.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I realize they're not necessarily from here, but I still think they're really cool.
I think that.
And they might as well be from here. For goodness sakes, they've been around for a long time.
Yeah. The economic value to the ringneck pheasant, especially to states like Minnesota, Iowa, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, where that is a pilgrimage
right.
for many people. We used to go pheasant hunting in South Dakota. My father,
I hear you go pheasant hunting all the time. You are talking crap.
I haven't for a very long time, but we used to go twice a year pheasant hunting to the Dakotas. And it's a thing. Like it is like walleye opener on Mille Lacs Lake in Minnesota. It is a thing.
Oh, it's a big deal, man. I lived in Nebraska, I was at the bar one day and these dudes were rolling into town. They were driving from California to South Dakota.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To go pheasant hunting.
And here you have like generational hunters. There's kids out there. It's a really cool thing. So I don't dislike pheasants. I like grouse better.
Yep.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I would say that, but I just don't want to, you know, disparage, you know, what is really a fine bird in my opinion.
And an excellent hunt. And in a lot of states, it goes late.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, a big one we haven't discussed yet is predator hunting.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think this also earns its own podcast, which we'll get into probably at another time. But let's just discuss predator hunting, which I know is a thing that I've seen, I don't want to almost say as though it's becoming popular or what, because I don't think it was ever not popular or a thing, but I've seen it get talked about more. So we're talking about coyotes.
Yep.
As well as...
When
people say predator hunting, what are they including?
It's regional.
It is.
I think a lot of times people say predator hunting and they're just meaning just coyote hunting.
I think a lot of times by and large, for the Midwest, yeah.
Yeah.
Even the West. I mean, there's some guys that, you know, you're just not going to get into bobcats and foxes as much as you're going to get into...
In Texas, you can get into a lot of bobcat. But
dude, Kansas has a lot of bobcats.
Can you hunt them? Can you shoot them down there?
Yeah.
The predator hunt that we need to do is Iowa, because you can shoot bobcats over the counter down there, too. Which is really, really, really cool. Yeah, that's a cool.
They just put them on the counter and you shoot them.
You just say, I'll take three.
Predator carnival game.
Yep, and pass them over.
Predator hunting, it is very fun. It's kind of controversial, too. A lot of people.
Can be.
Yep. Yep. A lot of folks have some things to say about
that. Is it mostly controversial just because some people think you're just killing to kill?
That, and I think a lot of people assume that most of these animals are canids and that they have some sort of like higher level of sentience over, say, a deer. Like there's
right,
something
it reminds them of their dog.
Yeah, there's
home.
Something right. about that, and I mean I can understand the perspective somebody would take on that.
Yeah.
And I'm not a coyote or a wolf hater. I don't think we need to eradicate them all at all.
Agreed.
I don't feel that way at all. I'm not a person who shoots a coyote when I see it in the field just to shoot it.
Mm-hmm. Are wolves included in predator hunting? Right?
Some states.
Okay.
Yeah, some states you.
But yeah, I know. Sometimes it's like off limits. Sometimes not.
So yes. I mean, typically you could classify it as a non-game species.
Yep.
You know,
right?
Because people aren't.
In some states, they are. You know, a non-game species.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think in some states, I think you don't even need a hunting license.
No. Yeah.
One of the more enjoyable experiences of my life or hunts of my life was a predator hunt, and we use calls. I use hand calls. You can in some states use electronic calls, and in some states you can hunt at night with artificial lights or thermal devices. I'm not super keen on that, but I do like calling a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're out there, you're hunting, I mean, you're hunting the apex in the landscape, right? You're hunting the thing that hunts the other things, which is pretty neat. And you're calling it and you've got to play wind like you would. You've got to be very adept at camouflage. And you have to know how to call. You have to fool this wary predator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to be a good shot too.
Yep.
Yeah. Sometimes, people talk about deer hunting and they talk about how, you know, spooky the deer are, where you know you want to be real quiet, be sensitive to where your smell might be coming from, and all this stuff, because if the deer catches you, they'll spook and run off. And then when they talk about coyote hunting, they're just kind of like, yeah, you just go out, set up, and they're also pretty spooky though.
They can be, right? If they're pressured heavily. I was you know, when electronic calls got really mm-hmm. big onto the scene, and e-callers have been around since the 80s and probably even earlier than that, if you look at some of the cassette and even record versions.
I mean, Johnny Walker cassette, you know,
But like digital e-callers that have pre-programmed sounds on them, I always say, you know, the tricky part about hunting coyotes near my hometown was everybody knew rabbit number 146 on the playlist. And, you know, everybody bought the same e-collar, whatever brand, you know, and, and watching the videos, we knew that coyotes like rabbit and stress calls.
Yeah.
And so everybody's out there, wah, wah, wah. They become non-responsive. They have also learned that when you hear that, if you go investigate, somebody zings at you with an AR or a shotgun.
Yeah.
Right. And so it can pressure.
So then they start coming downwind view when they come up on you.
Or you never see them on the set.
Man, I think, I mean, sometimes they'll come charging in.
Yep.
But, I mean, there's a reason why the cartoon version is called Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah.
Because they are wily. I mean, they're experts at survival.
Yep.
Experts.
And if you're talking about calling them, they know you're there. Mm-hmm. So they are. It's the same thing like when you grunt at a buck. The first thing that buck does is he you know, articulates himself so he can approach from downwind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a primary, I would say, method of predator hunting is calling them. And those, like you said, in high-pressure areas, they're not going to come in from upwind. So, like, you might set up in a spot where the wind is blowing right in your face, and there you are looking at this 180 degrees in front of you when, in reality, you know, you should almost have
another shooter.
Another shooter, the back-to-back thing. Or if you are alone, setting up with like a crosswind, I think is the, you know, like I face think, due south with a west wind, or due north, vice versa, whatever.
Mm, that's totally key.
So when you're hunting coyotes, so let's stick to that because I know that there's other things that we can talk about. We'll stick to hunting coyotes. So like you said, it happens during the day. I know the one that a lot of people like to talk about is the nighttime coyote hunting because it involves all kinds of super sweet high-speed operator gear. Like, you got night vision and thermals and an AR that has more attachments on it than you can throw a stick at.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also do it during the day, right?
When I was growing up, I thought that you did not hunt predators during the day.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The notion was you hunted them moonlit, snowy. I thought that's how you did it.
Yep.
And it wasn't until I kept going out late at night and never shooting anything that I'm like, man, I'm going to try this during the day. And it was like, oh, wow, you can see them when they come in.
Well, and to me,
damnest thing.
And when we do the Predator podcast, I'll probably just repeat myself, but that's the one thing. I love hunting coyotes during the day because you do get to see them during the day. It's not just like, oh, there's the eyes and they popped up the last minute. I mean, if you can see 500 yards, or I've seen them at 1,000 yards and just hang up or whatever, but man, you get to watch them come in, you get to watch them, you know, try and cut your wind, and you really get to see them.
That predator-prey, you know, interaction.
Yeah, you know, at their craft.
Mm-hmm. It's not a super productive nighttime thing if you don't have the advantage of artificial lighting or like, a night vision device.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, some states legal, some states not.
Yep. And so, like, looking, I like hunting them during the day. I think that's to what Mark said. Hunting them out in the Dakotas and in Nebraska and Arizona and the western expanses, which you have, like, big terrain, watching multiple coyotes or gray fox or whatever the predator is out there coming into your set at one time from different directions.
That's pretty crazy.
Oh, yeah. Super cool.
Huh.
And watching them use the terrain, you're like, wow, that's...
And then understanding...
That's why you get by every day.
Yeah. And then understanding how sensitive they are. We had a coyote, my hunting partner and I, we were mule deer hunting and glassing out over an area. We had a bunch of does, and there was a coyote, like, way out working. And, I mean, it was like, 500-plus yards.
Mm-hmm.
Just working, doing mouse and once called, just looking for, like, little snacks. And he's like, let's see if we can lip squeak that thing in. Because we didn't have predator calls on us. We weren't hunting predators. We were hunting mule deer. And so we're just sitting in this nice shaded kind of cut bank, 560-yard coyote trotting out there. And he just lip squeaks. And that thing locked.
He picked it up, huh?
Locked onto us. I mean, it's looking, doing the head turn. And he lip squeaked that coyote and he got it.
Jeez.
With a gun or bow?
With a gun.
Yeah. Jeez, that's nuts.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they got to eat all the time to live because they don't have the ability to nibble on sage.
Yeah.
So they're out there looking for mice and rabbits.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Dogs don't do super well with, like, veggies and things that aren't. Yeah, they're straight up carnivores. And when you hunt them in the winter, I know a lot of people prefer that too because their coats or their pelts
are hided up,
right.
All fluffed out. So then you can shoot those and I mean, sell it? Is that how
yeah.
it works?
I mean, if you're going to get into hide hunting, you know, the fur market's fairly volatile, but yeah, absolutely.
Got it. What was the other thing that I was wondering about? Oh, I was thinking about the guy. There's a guy we know when we go out to the Vortex stream. He's always out there.
Yeah.
James, right?
Yeah.
He basically almost only predator hunts now.
Yeah.
I think he's gone on a couple of other hunts. Like, he went on a big sheep hunt, I think. Right. That was pretty cool. But he doesn't hunt deer anymore because he was in a professional role at which he was hunting other hunters.
He was the predator.
He was the predator. I shouldn't say hunting other hunters because it makes it sound like he was going after poachers. That wasn't
It was his job.
It was his job. It was his job to be a professional predator. Anyway, so he prefers not to go hunting after something that he feels is just sort of out and about doing its own innocent business or something like
right.
that. And this is all a personal thing. He has nothing against anybody who deer hunts. It's just how he's wired. It's how he was professionally trained for many years. And
mm-hmm.
so he only goes predator hunting because he enjoys hunting something that is also hunting.
Yeah.
So hunting another predator. And he really likes doing, you know, he likes going after wolves at where he is. And I know, again, controversial wolf topic, but whatever. But this is what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And he sets it up and he really gets a kick out of the fact that when he calls them in, they're coming to kill him. What they think he is.
Yeah, they think they're going to come in and grab an easy meal.
Yeah.
You know?
And yeah. That's kind of what he gets his kicks
from. Right. That's what makes his heart go a million miles an hour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and of course, it's all legal and everything, too. Yeah. So we're not discussing just sort of like mindless wolf killing. I mean, this is legal and all stuff. But it is an interesting way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, when you're calling predators, you're assuming the role of the prey. And that animal that's coming in, it hears a distress sound. So it has food on its mind. I mean, granted, is a wolf going to attack the person on the other side of the call? Probably not. But that is what its mindset is when it's coming in. You know, if that thing does catch the slightest bit of human scent, it's probably out of there.
Yep.
But, you know, it's an interesting dynamic to try and fool something by pretending to be its food.
Yeah. Well, and then one thing that I think gets talked about a lot less, and hopefully, Jim, we're going to get a chance to talk with a expert at predator hunting. I'd say predator hunting / specifically coyotes, but coyote vocalizations and knowing how and when to use them, you know, that's just a whole nother layer to that calling game that's super interesting.
Mm-hmm. Because I think, you know, and I'd be curious what your thoughts are in like these heavily predator hunted states. I really do think your best chance is to howl a coyote in rather than it is to use, you know, the Primo's rabbit cottontail in distress that you can literally depict the sequence, you know. So, I don't know. I'd be curious, like, what people's thoughts are on that.
Every set, I start with howl.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, what is your calling sequence? How do you start it out? And then, how long are you on stand? And when do you finally wrap it up?
Depends on where, I'm just going to say, like, 30 to 45 minutes.
Yep.
Generally, for a particular area. There's times where I'll be out longer, and there's times where, I'm really not going to be out shorter than that, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
But every sequence, I start with a howl. And then I kind of maintain that. Or
Is it a certain type of howl? Like a challenge howl?
Depends on what time of the year.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they have a rut too. Coyotes get into a breeding cycle around here, you know, January to February is kind of their hot time. And then now you can get into territory disputes with dogs. Mm-hmm. You can get into like a breeding coaxing. There's a female vocalization mm-hmm. versus a male vocalization, mm-hmm. a dominant vocalization versus a sub vocalization and
just location.
Yeah.
Like, you know, where are you? I'm over here.
Yep.
Oh, okay, cool.
And so it is fun. The dynamic is really cool because if you play the wrong card, like the whole thing is off.
Huh.
If you're calling with a sub vocal and you get a sub dog to come in and you inadvertently do an aggressive howl, that he's gone. I mean, out of here.
Almost. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh yeah, because they've got their pecking order lined out, you know. And then, but then you might find two. It's almost like when you get two bucks that are evenly matched, right? It's like, well, let's just see how this shakes out,
right.
You know.
And it is really neat, and especially when you get into the time of the year that they're tuned up and you get them vocalizing back to you,
dude.
And so it's not every time, and I would say it's probably less often, unless you are hunting inside of that territory dispute breeding period time for coyotes. in which you're getting them to call back and you're getting them to vocalize back at you and stop and yell back at you. It's like hunting turkeys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
You know? And so, I start every set with a howl and then get into canid vocalizations. And then depending on what time of year it is and where I am, I don't want to give away all the secrets, but I will tell you this. The closer you hunt to an urban area, the higher the frequency of felines you have. And Primos makes a few calls that have a smaller reed on them that if you use your teeth and you slide up and down the reed just right, you make what I call the kitty mew. And it's a call that sounds like mew, mew. And if you know, if you've ever held a kitten in your hand, that's the sound that it makes. And in highly populated areas where coyotes may get a bit of pressure from not only, you know, the town dog catcher, but also folks trying to get rid of coyotes.
Yeah.
They hear that kitty mew call.
Interesting.
They're coming.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got to think. It's like, you know, cats don't just live in, you know, they're not, I mean, of course, a fair amount of cats get taken from, you know, the suburbs and things like that.
Yep.
You know,
huge predator of cats.
Taken. Feline edition. Continue.
There's a lot of, and maybe this is exactly what you just said, but like, you know, there's a lot of feral cats out there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're having kittens and.
Yep.
You know,
that's a food base.
You got to play your vocalizations, I think, to a point appropriate to what the prey option is at the time of year and at the location that you're at. So I'm not going to go kitty mew out in the middle of the South Dakota plains.
Right. That probably haven't heard that.
No, probably not. Just as I'm probably not going to use fawn in distress in an areas with like low deer populations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so, or elk in distress. A lot of overlooked stuff is like bird sounds, like bird in distress, woodpecker nuthatch, blue jays. Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, a big part of just pick on a coyote, their food base is voles, mice, other rodents, and birds.
Hmm. There's one other calling late season hunt opportunity that I think it should be talked about, calling raccoons.
Oh, yes. You're the only other person I know that has done this.
Please explain. Literally the one of the most fun things
you can do in
the winter.
If it works, it's probably better than coyote hunting.
Yeah. I mean,
explain. So, where are you doing it? I could call every raccoon in Madison to my garbage can.
Daytime, though. Like, you're bringing a...
If I wanted.
Jim sitting bait.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what's
that
cool...
That garbage can is getting an extra fresh thing of raw beef tonight. And
what's cool about raccoon calling is when it works, it's like a five-alarm fire drill. So when you're walking in the woods, you'll find these trees that are...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but can you explain? So, like, is that small game season?
Yeah, fur bear?
Depends on the state.
Yeah.
So like in Minnesota, you can't do this during the winter.
Oh, really?
Because they close it.
Okay.
So it is state dependent.
It does depend on the state. Yeah. Because I remember I was like, I'm going to go try and shoot some coons. Actually, I think I was planning on shining. Actually, I haven't done it yet, so I need to recheck the regulations. But does it close in February here?
I'm looking it up.
Yeah.
Continue.
I feel like I was going to go, and I was like, oh, you can't.
Yeah.
Which surprised me.
It goes, it for sure goes past December and into January. It might close February 1 or like February 15, somewhere in there.
Is it its own thing or is it part of another bigger season, like small game?
It falls under, in Wisconsin, it falls under your small game umbrella. Like that's a license that you need to go do it.
Yeah.
But from a tactical side of things, basically what you do.
Okay. Yeah. The fun part.
Yeah. Is you'll, you know, you walk in and I'm talking about doing this during the daytime, you know, like some raccoon hunting might be done at night and it's done with like the use of artificial lights and whatnot. But this, and it is so much more fun to do during the daytime. You'll walk into the woods and you'll pick out these trees, preferably like a big oak tree or some kind of big dead tree that has, you know, that's hollowed. And that has a higher likelihood of being a den tree, which is where raccoons are going to be hanging out. So what you'll do is you'll get your call very close to that tree. If you can add some kind of visual element to it, like a little fur spinner or something that goes on top, that's going to help coax them out. Because what you're doing there is you're simulating a raccoon fight right outside the house. So it would be the equivalent to me going in front of Mark's front door and just start yelling and screaming, hey, get out of here. I'm going to take your head off. And then Mark either is going to come out the door and he's going to slowly peer out. Or if Mark's feeling super, you know, beastie that day, like some of these raccoons, he's going to open up the front door and just charge. And that is what you get with these raccoons. Sometimes they either poke their head up out of the hole, and they're like, ooh, that's a bad fight. I want to go back in. And then you don't get them. But then sometimes they will literally, I've only had this happen like two or three times, where they come out and they like literally jump out of the tree from 20, 30 feet, hit the ground, and they run right into that spinner decoy. It is the craziest, most fun thing.
And that's there's wild. Some crazy sounds those things make.
Oh, terrifying.
It's horrible.
Yeah, Hell is Rising is basically what I would call it if I was going to name
it. I remember
audio
when
track.
You yeah, when you played me one of the videos of these things charging something, it sounds disgusting.
It
like,
is
it sounds,
so fun.
It sounds like what I expect an exorcism to sound like.
Yeah.
And that's accurate.
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
Pretty accurate. Yeah, a coon fight is, it's just like blood curdling. It's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, if you live in like a area where there's raccoons, and you've ever like on a summer night, you got the windows open, you just hear like what sounds like the devil outside. It's raccoons. That's what you're hearing.
Yeah.
In the state of Wisconsin, resident season for raccoons, which is as Eric had said, a small game license requirement, October 19th to February 15th.
Okay. Ooh.
Tricky part with this, they kind of semi hibernate.
Yeah.
And so if it gets too cold. Mm-hmm. It's game over.
Yep.
A good fortunance is you get that spell in early February where all of a sudden it's like 40 for no reason.
Game on.
And they wake up and they're like they get kick started. They want to come out and feed. We had that last year.
Yeah.
We had the polar vortex, and which was I believe in January.
Yep.
And then less than a month later, we had like 40 degrees.
It was like a Sour Patch Kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. First they hate you, but then they're sweet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember driving down the road and the snow had melted off some of the cornfields and it was like flocks of raccoons, skunks, and possums out feeding on corn that had been on the top. And they're like in a semi-drowsy state.
Yeah.
And
I just woke up.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it also that kind of stuff kills a lot of those fur bearers and stuff like that because then it can get cold on them again and they're not in a state in which they can hibernate well. They don't do good.
What's the artificial light rule on
hunt them during the day? It's so much better.
Yeah,
like no lights.
If you,
I agree. If given the opportunity,
yeah.
If you can get into the,
because I think do we still have the rule for coyotes? You can if
you
you're
can
hunting
use
at
it
night,
at the point of the shot.
At the point of the shot,
you cannot scan a field, and I believe the same rule applies to raccoons. Okay. Like you can't go out there and just start shining around,
shining for eyes, and like oh, there's one.
That's interesting.
What gun are you using on a raccoon? Is it 22 or a shotgun?
So I used to have a 17 HMR, that thing was like the bee's knees for that. Mm. I recently sold it, and now I'll use a 22 for that.
I think if somebody was looking to kind of talk about the gun podcasts, if you wanted the ultimate rifle for hunting raccoons, it's a Magnum Research in 22 Magnum.
I was just going to say.
Or Volkartsen in 22 Magnum.
What about a 204?
Too much juice.
You think so?
Is this like a semi-auto? Yeah.
It's a 10-22 basically in 22 Magnum.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
A 22 long rifle will work too. Headshots. I mean, raccoons are a dense creature. They're small bears as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So, you know, to be ethical and humane, try to dispatch them with a headshot. A 22 Magnum or a 17 is a darn good option.
Yeah. If you've ever watched like a bear hunt, you know, like a black bear or any kind of bear hunt, you know, the bear gets shot behind the shoulder and it goes rawr, and kind of like growls at the impact and then runs off. The first raccoon I ever shot was right behind the shoulder at like 10 yards. And that thing, you would have thought you were watching a bear hunt because it rawr,
dude, they
got
are,
out of there.
I think Ryan and actually we're going to make a raccoon hunting video at one time and we're going to call it mini bears. Maybe I was talking about that with you or somebody else. I don't know, but I mean, like, you really
is this
could.
A music video or is this a hunting video?
It'd be like, I mean, they are mini bears. You can bait them, you can call them, you can.
Yep.
They actually taste like bear too.
I've never eaten one.
They're good.
I've only shot a couple of them.
Probably.
We got to do this year.
They eat good. My grandfather. We've talked about this.
How
before.
Does something that makes a living eating out of my trash?
Well, consider
don't they have like a flatworm? They've got some sort of parasite you do need to be careful of.
Consider this, though. The raccoons in urban areas eat out of trash bins because there's food there.
Yeah.
So
the raccoons in the country.
That's clean living.
Yeah. They're eating corn.
Nuts.
They're just
corn,
like a white-tailed buck.
I wouldn't go that far. But
they don't feed off like dead stuff like animals, do they? Or,
I mean,
or
they're
they'll eat crayfish and frogs. And
watch a raccoon feed. They clean what they eat.
Yeah.
They're very keen on.
So that. Don't shoot a city coon and try to eat it.
I probably wouldn't. Mm-mm. But I've eaten some country raccoon and they're good. They taste just like bear. They're really greasy to skin.
Yeah.
But they're good. Cook them just like bear.
I believe it.
I'd be curious to cook one like Jason did that javelina the other day.
Oh yeah.
Like a
barbacoa.
Barbacoa.
Yeah. That was so good.
So here's the question as we come into an hour. The holiday season does not mean hunting season is over.
No.
There are many, many things that you can still be out doing.
Mm-hmm.
What time of year, and I know everybody in this room enjoys hunting thoroughly. I know I'm personally surrounded by people who think about hunting nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
What time of year is the time of year where things slow down and maybe you consider heading back to
doing
the
art.
Range and getting more your replacing gear, things like that. What time of year do things genuinely start to slow down?
February.
Yep.
I was going to say February, March.
February, March.
You'll say this about March. There's some turkey opportunities in the southern parts of the country.
But then once you hit April up here.
Then it's time to go again.
It's time to
go
again.
The mushrooms are popping. The turkeys are squawking. Everything is good again. The mm-hmm. world has returned to
balance. I tell
you,
as I've, you know, I think maybe whatever, when you're younger, like your world is like, your world, right? It's smaller. And so, like, growing up, like, hunting season for me was, like, October, November.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Then all of a sudden, you start learning about archery elk. You're like, oh, yeah, September. And then hunting really is, there's always something to do. Even in February and March, there's things to do, right? But, like, you kind of, like you said, that is a nice little recoup time of get your gear set, make adjustments, and get ready for turkey season and spring bear.
Definitely.
I do consider it the dark times, though.
It does.
You look out the window, like, you can't chase anything that you're necessarily going to be eating. It's my least favorite time.
That's when you need the freaking mood lamp. Like,
the happy lamp.
Yeah, the happy lamp.
Yep.
Yeah.
I need the energy.
Give it to me. I need a happy lamp.
I've got a final thought on some of these seasons that we've been talking about, though.
We're
talking about the holiday hunt, right? Families together, this, that, the other. One thing that I really like, and like I said, I'd never do any of these, you know, small game pursuits.
Can I point out Mark's notes?
Take it from that.
I'm sorry. Is that?
But you talk about holiday hunt, like being like camaraderie. A lot of these things, that's the beauty of it. Like, big game can be, maybe you do it with other people, but you know, you have to be quiet. Like,
it's kind of an individual sport.
A squirrel hunt. Not that you don't have to be quiet, but I feel like there's opportunity for a little bit more camaraderie. Go with the group. There's less, I guess, quote, pressure to be successful, even though you want to be. You know, waterfowling is super, you know, social. I don't know. Like, I just think...
challenge for everybody is to do a hunt where you're not worried about anything, you know? Like, don't worry about what your scent is doing. Don't worry about any of, like... make sure your gun shoots straight. That's probably one thing you
That sounds like every hunt for me. I pretty much usually go out completely unconcerned with anything about my scent.
It's a full blitz. House blitz every single time.
Yeah.
My point was, it might be a little bit more relaxing, a little bit more fun, a little bit lower pressure.
I think to extend, Mark, what you had said, when we think about small game hunting, there's generally a lot of effort put in, especially if you like kicking brush piles for rabbits.
Oh, man, yeah.
Or walking big tracks of public for pheasants that are getting hammered.
Or grouse. I mean, you covered insurmountable miles for grouse for a couple flushes in a day, perhaps.
Yep. You're like the reward... for efforts put in. I think when a lady or a guy holds two bushy tails in their hand after a successful squirrel hunt, walk in public.
Yep.
Or you hold up the rooster that's got the bad tail on, it's all kind of model. That's big. I mean, you should be as proud to hold that up as you should a big buck.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. And I'm hoping my previous comment, and I was thinking about that, portrayed like, oh, these are like easy, just gimme pursuits, and you can just, you know, talk and be loud, and there's like, you don't have to be a good outdoorsman, because that wasn't my point.
No,
but,
no.
I don't think that's how you took it, but I just want people to, you know, because, I mean, heck, Jim, you and I went squirrel hunting that one day, and we kind of even talked about that.
Skunked.
I was like, oh, let's go, just go shoot these things. And we're like,
we have to go to the Walnut Grove.
That didn't,
The Walnut Grove is magical.
I know what you're talking about, though, Mark.
It
is
true. The high fence of squirrel hunting.
There is something about him that seems as though the pressure has been dropped a little bit. And I think maybe some of it has to do with the fact that you shoot a deer, you've gotten meat, if you're me, for 2 weeks. you shoot a squirrel, you've got, you know,
breakfast.
An appetizer. So in regards to just that, you think to yourself, well, hey, if I go out and I shoot a squirrel or I don't shoot a squirrel, that's an appetizer mm-hmm. I just lost. Whereas if I go out in a season and I don't shoot a deer, now I lost a freezer full of meat.
Right.
You know, so the stakes in terms of steaks are bigger. And so it's easier to put a little bit more pressure probably on yourself that way.
Yeah, well, and like, you know, a deer, like, you know, which they're not easy to kill or any big game animal, right? But like oftentimes you're allowed one.
Yeah, right.
And you put in a lot of effort to get that one where you're like, yeah, you're allowed multiple squirrels a day. And I think that's where I personally like, I'm like, oh, well, we can just go do that later. Then I never,
you know, right.
Or infrequently going.
Right.
I cut off your last thought there.
I don't. I'm going to Nebraska next week on a deer hunt. I want to go squirrel hunting now, man. I want to like. Maybe we should just.
You should bring the shotgun and go rabbit hunting. Ooh. That's a good rabbit state.
I have a buddy who was just hunting South Dakota. Took his dog out there. I think he was actually on a deer hunt, but he brought his shotgun and he ended up like saying screw the deer and just ended up like hunting grouse and pheasant.
Really?
Yeah.
I did flush a lot of all things prairie chickens.
Yeah.
Cool.
That was neat. I'd seen one prairie chicken in my life before that on my way to that same unit a couple years ago and flushed flocks of them. I was flabbergasted. It was prairie chicken.
Was this South Dakota?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys ever watch or ever go to Disney World and ride It's a Small World?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Long time ago.
Terrible ride. But anyway, that is how I felt this deer season out during rifle season as I was sitting in my blind, looking around me at all the squirrels. I felt as though I was in that ride again, and just there's just hundreds of squirrels around me all saying, yeah, it's a small world, and they're all jumping around and running in the trees, and it was so distracting. I'm used to seeing, like, you know, you got one squirrel or whatever, but I'm not kidding you. It looked like a scene from Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory.
Yes,
a bunch of Oompa Loompas running around. So many of them.
Yeah. All you gotta do is get back in there with a 22.
And that was my problem, is I didn't bring the 22 in with me. All I had was the 300 Win Mag, and so I wasn't looking to vaporize any of them.
You have a suppressed 22, right?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
It's so suppressed. In fact, all you hear is the firing pin being contacted, or the striker being released, or something. However the thing works, it's scary.
Yeah, you assume it's a jam.
You do. I mean, seriously. Yeah. The first time I shot it, I heard click, and I was like, ah, dang it! And I go around, start fuddling around with it, and then I open up the bolt because it's not powerful enough to cycle the bolt in the 10/22. I open up the bolt, and boop, out pops a spent case.
Oh my God! This thing's been going off the whole time.
Jeez, I gotta start checking for holes. Anyway, so.
With all right,
said,
everybody.
What are we still doing here? We should go out and try and shoot some squirrels. Thanks everybody for listening. Get out there. Keep hunting until you just can't hunt no more.
Amen.
Keep it up.
Agreed.
All right. Bye.
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 All right. That'll wrap it up for this episode of the Vortex Nation podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hit that subscribe button so you can always stay up to date on the latest happenings over here at the Vortex Nation podcast. Leave us a review or comment down below. We want to hear what you have to say about the show, maybe what you like, maybe what you didn't like, so that way we can make these podcasts as good as they can be. You can also follow us on Instagram at Vortex Nation Podcast. We'll be posting about each episode released, so that way you can go back, find these things, maybe grab a little nugget of information that you can take with you to the range, out in the field, or maybe to the kitchen if we're talking about some good food. So again, everybody, thanks, and happy hunting and shooting. We appreciate it. Have a good one.